morning, everyone. Welcome to Thursday in the Doghouse, where everyone literally goes to the dogs for 30 minutes every week. I'm your host, Rainey Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. As a dog trainer, I see so many great dogs and so many wonderful people when I visit them in their homes and work with them in group classes. I always commend people for wanting to train their dogs and for knowing how important it is to give their dogs direction and guidance throughout their lives. I also want to compliment you for tuning in each week to this very educational program devoted solely to our pet dogs. Sometimes we do cats, too. If you've missed any or all of my programs, you can always listen to them by visiting my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Click on the page marked Rainey's Radio Show, and then scroll down to click on the podcast links showing the subjects we've talked about. Many shows are devoted to breed specifics, health issues, serious and not so serious behavior problems, and certainly I've talked a lot about the benefit of using positive training techniques. Anyone that knows me or has trained with me can tell you I strongly oppose shock collar training and using harsh punishments on our dogs. Unfortunately, many people are looking for a quick fix, but eventually discover that those quick fix methods only cause other behavior problems to develop, some even more serious than the original ones they were attempting to eliminate. But today we're going to lighten up a bit. My guest is Linda Case. Linda has extensive expertise in canine and feline nutrition, behavior and training, and companion animal health. She operates Autumn Gold Dog Training Center and is the author of 4 books, as well as numerous scientific papers and pet owner educational materials. Autumn Gold is the creator of the Dog Talk Project, a web-based program of dog owner surveys that studies the relationship between people and their dogs. She has a couple of survey results on her website that are devoted to greyhounds and also the American Pit Bull Terrier. We'll talk about the results of some of her very interesting surveys and why she devotes so much time to collecting all of this data. Before we talk to Linda, please let me tell you what services I offer in the South Jersey area as a professional dog trainer and behavior consultant. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rainey Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Linda. Thanks for joining us in the doghouse today.
Good morning, Rainey. It's nice to be here.
What is the background of the Dog Talk Project? What is that all about?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. It's actually got kind of an interesting background. As you may know, I'm a science writer, and I specialize in companion animal issues. The Dog Talk Project online came about as the offshoot of a new book that I'm working on called Dog Talk, How People Talk About the Dogs in Their Lives. And what actually happened was that one of the book projects that I had in line was to do something that examined the relationships between people and their dogs. And what I was specifically interested in was looking at how different ways in which we live with dogs and different types of people, people who are involved with rescue compared with people who are involved in dog sports compared with kind of your average pet owner who, you know, has 2 kids and a dog and their dog is a family member but, you know, don't do anything special in terms of dog sports or rescue with their dog, and kind of comparing how different demographics of people live with and love their dogs. And the long story short is that my husband is a research engineer, and he specializes in computer-aided and simulated intelligent systems, basically integrated systems that are basically robotics or the way in which computers think and learn. And so he suggested creating an online program of surveys that ask people about the relationships with dogs, and he built this underlying computer system that allows us to combine any answers that someone puts in. For example, if someone joins and says, I'm a middle-aged woman who lives in New Jersey, and I have four dogs, and my dogs' names are, you know, Muffin, Sandy, Susie, and Jinx. When they put that information in, then whenever they come back to the program and take another survey, we are able to link all of their information together. So once someone takes a survey, I can go in and say, oh, you know, the owner of Jinx is also someone who is involved in agility, and she also enjoys going to her shelter and volunteering, and she has a special interest in, you know, Nova Scotia duck tolling retrievers. And so the power of this program, just compared with other types of survey programs where you take one survey, you get that information, and then you're done, the power of this program is that it allows us to look at many different facets of relationships that people have with dog, many different human demographics, and what I'm really enjoying is the different dog demographics. We can compare breeds, we can compare age groups, we can compare the source of dogs. For example, we were just this weekend looking at shelter dogs and rescue dogs compared with the general dog population, and we're seeing some really strong information regarding behavior that, yes, indeed, shelter and rescue dogs do have a higher indication or higher propensity of separation issues, you know, which you hear about, but there's not that much in the literature to support that. So it kind of morphed into this enormous program that started out just as, hey, I want to do a book on people's relationships with their dogs. So now the book is still part of it, but it's turned into a much larger research project as a result.
That's wonderful, and you're right. So if you know, shelter and rescue dogs you find that are more prone to separation anxiety, and you have that in your survey, so that scientific background, and people can begin to rely on information like that to better their understanding of these dogs.
Exactly. And you know, I think, you know, it still doesn't answer that question that kind of burns at us all of, well, you know, it's a chicken and the egg question, is do dogs end up at shelters because they're having separation issues and people, you know, relinquish them or dump them for that reason, or is something about being abandoned in the dog's experience of that triggering some of these separation issues? You know, and we really, you know, to get at that would be very difficult, but I think it did, you know, piques our interest enough here that it's now in line for another survey. What I'd really like to do, we have a large proportion of our members, our shelter people. I think the project has really piqued their interest because it gives them a voice. And so what we'd like to do is create a survey specifically for rescue folks and shelter people and ask them about these issues as well.
This is great. You know, I attended, I don't know if you know who Dr. Nicholas Dodman is.
Oh, yes, I love him.
Yeah, me too. And he's been on the show several times already. But during one of his seminars, he did say that, and we talked about the propensity of developing separation anxiety, and he said in order for a dog to develop separation anxiety, genetically he has to be set up for that anyway. So that might be an interesting outcropping of your survey. I don't know how you would get genetic information from all of these dogs, but, you know, in other words, the dog would have to have a weakness to set him up for that anyway.
I think there is very good evidence for that, just if you look at breed predispositions. And we could get at that through our surveys. You know, we also do have information like the About, you asked on one of your questions, I know you were going to ask about the About Your Dog survey. That's we kind of laugh at that's the dog demographic survey, in that it asks, you know, the dog's breed, and if the dog is classified as a mixed breed, we do ask the owner to select what breed they think is the, you know, is the largest contributor to that mix.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do have that genetic information. You know, I think it's a great question because, you know, we could take that a step further. You know, if we looked into dogs in the program, you know, especially as our numbers grow, who have separation issues, and find out, you know, do we know anything about actual lines of the purebreds? You know,
yeah.
Is there a propensity there? So we could, you know, kind of ratchet it down further and further and get better and better information, especially as our numbers grow.
Right. That's fascinating. You know, Linda, being a trainer myself, I immediately honed into your survey that you titled The 10 Most Common Behavior Problems in Dogs. Can you explain to us more about what you found after taking that survey?
Sure. I'm glad you asked about that particular one. What we've done, the project is just about 10 months old. So what we decided to do when we saw the overwhelming response that we had, you know, people really are enjoying the project. And one of the things I actually wanted to mention, too, that I didn't earlier when I was talking about it is, again, you know, it kind of morphed into this bigger project. And one of the things that I found just so exciting is that it's giving people a voice. And people want to tell their stories about their dogs. They want to tell how they live with their dogs. They want to tell us what their experiences are. And I think these collective experiences of people from all facets of the dog world are just invaluable, you know. And we, in every survey, we provide at least one what we call the dog talk question. And it's an open-ended question that allows people to tell their stories. And so when we started, we thought, you know, we're getting such a response. People really want to tell their stories. Why don't we start and just do a broad base of each large topical area? So we created a survey that said the 10 most common behavior problems, the five most important healthcare practices, just to give kind of a large sweep of these areas, allow people to tell us what they're interested in, and then we'll start to make, you know, develop more precise and detailed surveys. So our behavior survey just asked, we divided the types of problems into two large categories, just really to kind of keep things more workable in terms of numbers. And we call those behavior problems and training problems. And in the behavior problems, and I personally find this a little concerning and something I'd really like to look into more, by far the most common behavior problem category that people identified was excessive attention-seeking behavior. 71% of the owners identified that as either a current problem or a past problem in the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And second to that was hyperexcitable behaviors and hyperactivity, which I think, you know, those three are probably all correlated with
right.
one another.
Right.
Those are by far the most common. The least common, and this is, I think, good news, only 13% identified being nervous or fearful with one or more family members. The percentage was obviously a little bit higher. It was about 40% with unfamiliar people.
Mm-hmm.
And aggression was quite low. Aggression to family members was just 5%. Aggression to unfamiliar people, 18%. And I think, you know, as a trainer, you'd expect this as well.
Mm-hmm.
Aggression to unfamiliar dogs is the highest, about
mm-hmm.
40%.
Right, right.
The other behavior problem that was quite high that, I again, was a little bit surprising to me, almost 71%, identified chasing small animals as a problem in their dog.
Mm-hmm.
So those were the most common behavior problems. The two most common training problems, and again, as a trainer, I'm sure you'll appreciate this and probably expect it, 67%, about two-thirds, said that pulling on lead was a problem, and 66% jumping up to greet was a problem,
right.
Which, you know, some of us don't necessarily consider that a problem. But,
right.
but and again, we were. It's really important to note here that we were asking about the owner's perception. You know, where some of us might say, "Well, my dog does it, but it's not a problem." That person would select no. So these are the people that say it happens, and I consider it to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And also no reliable coming when called. About 62% identified that as a problem.
Mm-hmm. You made a statement on your website, I believe, that one of the things that people were talking about was what we term resource guarding, which would be a dog guarding its food, guarding its toys, guarding its owners, and that you had said that most people who talked about this did not feel that it was a problem for them. That was surprising to me.
Very, very fascinating.
Yeah.
And let me give you an exact statistic because I pulled these this morning. Aggression near the food bowl, which, as you know, is something that most rescue and shelter people test for and certainly is important to test for, about 24%, which I thought was quite high. You know, that's one in four about aggression near food bowl. They identified it as a problem. Then we could go ahead and actually we asked people to rate those problems on what's called the Likert scale, and we used a 1 to 5 point scale. And when we looked at the data of those, 24% of people who said yes, it's a problem, then we took those individuals and said, how did they rate that problem? That rated 1.99 on a level of 1 to 5, with 5 being the most severe. Mm-hmm. So that's a relatively low level of severity. So what that says is, it is relatively common, but those who have it appear to be managing it or appear to at least not consider it a big issue. And so I think that is good information to us as trainers to have to say, and certainly also maybe to rescue people and shelter people to say, should a dog food guarding be cause, for not being adoptable or for euthanasia, mm-hmm. or should we rethink this, mm-hmm. Because certainly the dogs that are in these homes, at least some people are saying, hey, we're managing it. Now, resource guarding with toys and chew bones was rated a little bit higher. And again, I think this would be an interesting issue to explore further. That was a 2.07, but still, that's not a high score on a scale of 1 to 5.
Now, Linda, during that survey, did you get into specifics as to whether these dogs who were guarding food and bones and things were actually biting people, or that wasn't part of the survey?
That is a great question, and no, it was not. Again, mm-hmm. this is just a broad sweep, and I think that would be the next step, would be to say, what are you, because again, we purposefully made these descriptions very broad and vague, possessive. We had just basically possessive or aggressive.
Right.
So yes, that's a great point, because are they talking about just freezing over the bowl, or just, a little grumbly, or are they talking about, an attempt to bite? And that would be very important. And, certainly I think we would expect that those that have dogs that are actually biting or have a bite history, mm-hmm. that they would rate that much higher in
right.
severity than someone who's managing it or who knows that the dog's just, a little touchy around its food bowl.
Right. There's so many surveys that you've done, and I was interested in so many of them, but our show is short, and I really want to get to things like you did a survey about greyhounds. What kind of information did you come up with regarding this breed of dog?
Oh, sure, great. Well, and I should say, and again, this is kind of the beauty of my husband's underlying computer program, is I actually didn't have to do a survey about greyhounds. What we can do is once people put in, their greyhounds in the About Your Dog survey, then I can take that and say, okay, tell me about the greyhounds. I can tell STSS, which is my statistics program. And then I'll take that, tell me about greyhounds. And so, for example, in this case, we had 45 greyhounds. And I can find those greyhounds on whatever other surveys that owner took about that particular greyhound. So I was able to say, well, let's go to the behavior survey and see if, Susie, the owner of George the Greyhound, took this survey. And I can pick out all of the greyhounds from that survey and do that with basically all of our surveys. So we were able to say, let's do a feature about greyhounds and find out everything we know. And what we found out was, I think, that a lot of people already know, but I think it's good validation, is that greyhounds are exceedingly gentle and loving. Although they have a very strong prey drive, their chase drive, of course, is a Gaishan breed, they're not unusually energetic. You know, they actually are kind of couch potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most people have said in their stories that they love this breed because while they do have a strong chase drive, they're actually quite easy in the house and that they're easygoing. They like to kind of hang out with you, sleep on the couch. Quite a few of them were involved in animal-assisted therapy and animal-assisted activity programs. That was interesting to find out. And, again, I think as we'd expect, the vast majority of them were rescue dogs. They were, you know, from the track and came into their forever homes through a rescue group.
Right. Well, this is fascinating. And I see that you have several surveys going on now. What kind of information are you looking for?
Well, right now what we're looking at, we reopened our Day in the Life survey, and the reason we had closed it was that I wanted to write an article. One of the ways we're kind of starting the book project is I'm writing a series of just small articles and submitting them to magazines, dog-related magazines, just to kind of, you know, pique people's interest in this topic and in the project, you know, that we'd like to get more members involved in Dog Talk. And so I closed it because that's a survey that takes everybody through a day in the life of their dog. But I got a lot of emails from people saying, I loved that survey, you know, and I have another dog that I'd like to put in on that survey. So we recently reopened it. And what that survey does is it says, you know, let's just look at your dog's daily life. You know, what's his morning like? Do you go for walks? How does he spend his day? If you work outside of the home, how many hours alone is he? Do you use doggy daycare? Does he go on vacation with you? So that survey is kind of just a let's take a walk through your dog's daily life. As I mentioned earlier, we have the About You and About Your Dog survey. We also have a 5 Most Important Healthcare Practices survey going, and that is similar to the behavior survey in that we just want a nice broad sweep of how are people taking care of their dogs? What do they consider most important in terms of health care? What do they consider is normal for taking their dog to the veterinarian? One of the things we just found was that the majority of people are still vaccinating for the core vaccines, distemper, hepatitis, and parvovirus, yearly. And I found that interesting since there's really been a shift towards not vaccinating annually dogs, but we're at least, you know, in our database,
mm-hmm.
most people are still doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then second to that are people who are vaccinating every 3 years or who are titering. And then another survey that we have, of course, is our nutrition survey, and that is our first highly detailed survey. We examine what people feed, how often they feed, what they think is important in terms of ingredients in foods, what they're concerned about in terms of safety and ingredients in their foods. And that is our newest survey, and it's been up, I think, a couple months now. So we have, about 400 so far that have taken that survey, and I'd like to let that one go until we have at least 1,000 or 1,500.
Linda, how can people participate in this survey?
All that they have to do is they go to the Dog Talk Project, And this is something I'm glad you asked about. They do have to register. And some people are a little concerned about that. And I think of anything, that's probably the issue we've gotten the most feedback on in terms of concerns. Because I think people feel that they should just be able to go take the survey and leave. The reason that they have to register is because when they register with their username, that username is what allows us in the underlying computer program to connect all their surveys together. We have to basically have some way of identifying them when they come into the program so that I know, and it also then, you know, allows them to not have to take the About You survey again each time they come in.
I see.
They take that once, they take a survey about the dog once, and then they can come in any time they like when we have new surveys, take a new survey, and we'll know who they are and we'll know who the dog is, so we can attach the dog's demographic information to, for example, if they take a survey about nutrition, we know, okay, this is a dog who's a 4-year-old Bichon, and this is what this 4-year-old Bichon is getting to eat. So that's the reason people have to register. But once they register, they can take any surveys that they want. We have a very strong and legally binding privacy agreement in that we don't sell any private information. We don't give away any private information mm-hmm. without consent. If you notice, we have a lot of Dog Talk Project members' pictures of their dogs on the site. When their name is included, we actually send them a personal email and say, you know, if you'd like, we will include your name with your dog, but if not, we will just have Dog Talk members' dog. And these, again, of course, are all pictures that people submit to us. We don't take them from anywhere, so it's all voluntary.
Linda, is it www.dogtalkproject.com?
Yes.
Wonderful. That's great. I have a question for you.
Sure.
Would you be interested in coming back and doing a couple more interviews, and then we can talk about maybe one specific survey that you've done that might be interesting to air to the general public?
Oh, I think that would be a blast. I would love to do that.
I would love to have you back. I think that this is really interesting, and I'd like to discuss a little bit further about the differences in demographics, how dogs are different in the South from the East and from the West and the North, and because I have dogs that are different from one part of the state to another.
That's so interesting. And actually, you know, it is something that we've wanted to look at. Right now, our two largest groups of dog folks are from the Midwest, and that might be because we're in the Midwest, I'm not sure, and then the Northeast. So your area is highly represented, as is the Midwest. The lowest is the Southwest.
Okay.
With the exception of Texas, I guess it would be considered Southwest. Texas has it. We have a very large Texas population, but in general, the Southwest is the least number right now.
Great.
We haven't seen too many differences. Like I was expecting differences in breeds, and we haven't yet. But you know, that is definitely something interesting to look at.
Linda, we only have a couple seconds left.
Yes.
I absolutely thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you for inviting me, Rena.
You're welcome, and I'm looking forward to getting more specific information about more specific type of surveys. And we'll set a date really soon for you to come back, okay?
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
I hope you have a wonderful day and a great holiday season, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks. You too, Rena.
Take care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye. Anybody need a potty break? We'll be back in just a minute.
I'm glad you're home. I've been holding it in. Grab the leash, let's go chop chop. If I don't get out soon, the court's gonna pop. Twist and shout, ooh, I gotta go out. Well, I'd love to stay and talk, of course, but I really need to see a man about a horse. Grab the leash, let's hit the road. I gotta get out, life in this mud. Twist and shout, I gotta go out. Gotta go out. Well, I've had too much to drink, I confess. Now I gotta go out and do my business. Grab the leash, I said what I meant. If I don't get out soon, there'll be an accident. Twist and shout, oh, please let me go out.
That's my cue. Our time is up. Please tune in again next Thursday from 10 to 10:30 when I interview Lucy Kennedy, who lives with two pugs, and she's very active in pug rescue. We'll all learn more about this energetic breed. Have a great week, everybody. Talk to you later.